Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for being with me again. Where I am is Thursday evening, but who knows what time it is or even what day it is that you're listening to this, which is one of the beauties of internet radio. I'm really looking forward to my guest this evening. Dr. Amelia Kemp is a psychologist who went much further and has looked at the spiritual implications of all the different psychological diagnoses and how to work with them. And you know I'm going to enjoy that. So she'll be with us in just a moment after tonight's metaphysical music. And tonight is a special night for me because tomorrow is the anniversary of my father's death. And in Judaism, you light a candle and celebrate your relatives on the anniversary of their death. And had he lived, he would be 104 years old now, but some 34 years ago. I was with him when he died, and that was a poignant moment, but more importantly, everybody always asks me, how in the world did you wind up doing this? And my joke is, you know, my junior high school guidance counselor said, you're not going to believe this, but 30 years from now, no, that's not the story. They thought I was going to be an engineer. So I was doing what I was doing at that time, my first career was I was a shop teacher. And my first marriage was falling apart. And my father got really sick. And I had just learned how to do hands-on healing. It was the very beginning of my doing this kind of stuff. And I went out to take care of him while he went through surgery for a brain tumor. And I worked on him, and I charged up his IV bottles, and I sat and meditated while he was in surgery. And 10 days later, he went home. He needed some, you know, visiting nurse care and stuff. But he just breezed right through that brain tumor. So a year later, things were very much in flux and coming apart. And I got a very strange phone call. It's a longer story, actually, but I got a very strange phone call from the charge nurse at the hospital where my dad was recovering from, or at least being treated for, a second brain tumor. And she told me a story, and I realized that I needed to rush out there and sort things out for him. And I went very quickly out to California. Someone picked me up, rushed me to the hospital. I had this very intense conversation with my dad, who had a paranoid delusion that made perfect sense to him, taking his experience of being picked up by the paramedics, well, it would have been EMTs that long ago, and taken to the hospital. And For his mind and what had gone on with him when he was younger, he thought that he had been picked up by the police, tied down, they shined lights in his face, and he was being interrogated, and he thought he needed to escape. The mind is a very interesting thing. So I had a conversation, since I knew the story, I knew what was underneath that paranoia. I helped him sort that out, and there were a bunch of friends and his boss, who was a psychologist, watching me, and his boss took me aside in the hallway, and he said, how long have you been in practice? And I said, I don't know, I'm not. He said, okay, never mind. Do you know anything about psychic surgery? So, which is kind of a non sequitur to say to somebody in the hallway of a hospital, except you've heard enough of my stories about walkabout and other people's stories about walkabout to know that this was one of those moments. And literally, I said to him, no, I don't know anything about it, but I think it's going to be one of those days. Why are you asking me this question? And he introduced me to a man who was trained in the Philippines as a psychic surgeon, who had a lot of success with people with cancer, and he thought it would be the turning point for my father. And I took my father was treated by him. I met all kinds of healers, looking for the magic person who was going to turn things around for my father. And along the way, I met a Cherokee medicine man who kind of took me under his wing and took care of me while I was going through this whole experience of tending to my father. And at some point, I realized that my dad was going through the motions of going to all these healers for me. He really was not going to go to any treatment. He was done. He was ready to leave. And I helped him with that, made sure all arrangements were made, and he knew that everything was taken care of so that he could leave. And it was an incredible moment, actually. There were a whole bunch of people singing to him and at the moment that he died. But then I needed to clean up everything for him and his, you know, very small estate, you know, his apartment and his stuff, and arrange to go back to the East Coast. And the last person that I went to was the Cherokee medicine man, the Kiowa. And as our conversations usually went, I said, he said, "So you're leaving?" I said, "Yeah." "You coming back?" "Yeah, I think so." "Do you know when?" I said, "Well, if this conversation goes like all our other conversations, you're about to tell me when." I said, "Well, yeah, pick me up on August 8th, and I got somewhere to take you that most white people don't get to see, but it's time for you to go." And I went back to the East Coast, cleaned up things as well as I could, bought a new truck, drove cross country in 4 days, and picked him up and went to a reservation to have an experience that was very profound. So this moment of my father's yahrzeit is a moment that also commemorates how my father, who was my first teacher, he was very much a magician and a metaphysician. I just didn't know that. He was just dad. And his mom also was often called magical. And she also had an understanding of all this stuff that, again, as a kid, I just didn't get it. But in the process of taking care of him when he died, I met my teachers and went out and apprenticed with them for 3 years. And it changed everything in my life. And here we are now with all the strangeness and all the wonderfulness that is my life today, including this wonderful radio show. So there you have it. You've got part of that story that everybody asks me about. Thank you, Dad, for everything. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now, let's have some fun with my guest tonight, Dr. Amelia Kemp. You with us, Dr. Kemp?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate being here.
Well, I'm excited about talking to you because you're, and thank you for sending me the book, and I didn't get to the post office today, unfortunately.
Oh, no, okay. That's all right.
These things happen. But you did something in the book and in your work that I find both remarkable and fascinating, and I'll tell you some stories about why it's important to me. So I'd like to do two things. I'd like you to give us kind of a quick overview of your work, and then tell us how you know, your walkabout, your journey. How did you wind up doing the work you're doing and writing this book? And then we can talk about what you came up with in the book. Does that make sense?
Sure, that's fine. I'll tell you about the book and then tell you about me. Well, I wanted to correct that I'm not a psychologist. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. My doctorate's in metaphysical theology.
And I'm sorry.
My master's is in mental health.
Uh-huh. So, I'm sorry. I often get that stuff wrong.
That's okay. Any clinicians out there would want that clarified. So that was for them. But in any case, my book is titled From Psychotherapy to Sacrotherapy, Alternative Holistic Descriptions and Healing Processes for 170 Mental and Emotional Diagnoses Worldwide. And the book offers three primary things. My book lets people with mental and emotional issues know that the well-being and joy they seek is still achievable. Secondly, my book removes stigma and pathology from all the 170 mental and emotional diagnoses, declaring for people that you're not sick, you're sacred, and thereby redescribes and redefines diagnosis from a holistic perspective. And thirdly, my book outlines eight sacred steps that help people to heal and align with what I feel is a true therapist within everyone by removing toxic conditioning, beliefs, and memes that interfere with the joyous life a soul comes forth into the physical to live. And so to fortify these things, the reader is given 24 healing exercises, some illustrations, and 12 additional aftercare practices, along with free weekly call-in or write-in support to ask questions, and online aftercare, including healing retreats, which are directly linked to me.
And fantastic.
So that's a summary, so to speak, of what the book's about. Now, to answer your second question as to why I wrote it.
Yeah, you know, everybody who does this stuff has a fascinating history and a fascinating story, and that's as much of interest to me and my listeners as any of the rest of it. You know, it's always, well, you learn so much along the way, let's hear how it happened.
Right. Well, I wrote the book because this is my middle of my 19th year now as a therapist. And I felt that many of my clients felt like they were stigmatized by having mental and emotional diagnoses, since the medical model termed mental and emotional diagnosis as disorders, which made it a part of the disease model. And as metaphysicians, we like to hyphenate the word to dis-ease.
Right.
So I felt the need to find an alternative way to re-describe and reinterpret these symptoms, which to me were simply reactions, not disorders, that could be better explained if the fullness of a person's beingness was included in the treatment plan, mind, body, and spirit, since I felt that the traditional mental health practices were fragmented, since they only focused on the biopsychosocial, which left out the spiritual aspects. And the reason that was important to me is because, having healed myself from anxiety and depression nearly two decades ago, I empathized with my clients and recalled how I felt. Just having certain diagnoses slammed on you, you walk out of the therapist's office feeling defective, like, oh God, something's wrong with me. And it felt really badly. And so when I saw that medication had its, it definitely helped, but it wasn't sustaining, and sometimes made me feel worse, until we could get the right cocktail together to assist with the anxiety and depression. And finally, when I was able to release that and started exploring alternative healing paradigms, I really got better. And so that's when I was exposed to Louise Hay's work, You Can Heal Your Body, and Catherine Ponder's work, Dynamic Laws of Healing, and many of the people in the metaphysical community. And I wasn't privy to that early on. And so I decided, once things weren't working for me or sustaining me, that I needed to go back to school and become a therapist myself to figure this out. And when I was having a conversation with one of the professors trying to explain how the holistic healing, herbal remedies, as well as affirmations and all that, seemed to have had a lot of validity in my life, I was shut down and told, if I was interested in that, I should have went into pastoral counseling, not into mental health. And
right.
I couldn't understand, why did I have to choose? I mean, couldn't there be a bridge here? And so she told me to leave that out and to offer people only the psychotropic medication and send them to their pastors if they were interested in that. And so I never forgot it, but during the first 8 years of my practice, I did keep it separate, but I couldn't help but notice how many of my clients were also seeking a more holistic embrace, because we were told to, you know, keep spirituality out unless it's bereavement. And even then, you're only dealing with the stages of grief. But because I had had some extrasensory perceptions myself, you know, I had been seeing auras since I was a child, but I was told, don't say that out loud or people are going to lock you up and throw away the key.
Right.
And so I shut up and didn't say anything. And so I was really scared because it made me think something really must be wrong with me. But when my father transitioned, listening to your story was dear to me, but when my father transitioned that night, I heard him and he told me, he said he was okay. And I said, Daddy, is that you? And he said, Sweetie, I'm okay. And then the phone rang 5 minutes later saying that my father had transitioned. And I said, I know, he just visited, and no one in my family would believe it.
Yeah.
And so my son, who was only 3 at the time, when we woke him up, because it was 3 or 4 in the morning, the first thing he said when we were waking him up to dress him was, Grandpa's not sick anymore. And I said, how do you know? And he said, he just told me. And so I looked at my husband and I said, see, I told you he was here. So that was confirmation for me.
Right.
That was confirmation that the auras and things I had seen, I didn't know it was even called an aura back then. I just knew it was light around people. And I was shocked that everybody didn't see it. So that mm-hmm. was news for me. So it did make me feel weird. And so naturally, when I asked the therapist before I became a therapist if they believed me, they said they believed that I believed it. And so there you have it. I was like, okay, I'm not about to tell her about the auras and she'll lock me up. So it was very interesting to have now, you know, 20 years later, to be embracing it openly and feel blessed to have it. I had no idea that through all that I had gone through in my life, that I would end up being the one to offer the world sacred therapy in my search and staying hours and hours in metaphysical bookstores and reading everything I could get my hands on. Would I be bridging mental health with spirituality this way, with universal spiritual principles? And when I started adding that and offering my clients a choice, the healing was going so fast, which I call an alignment. Alignment being an optimal or preferred balance between the mind, body, and spirit, where one has greatest access to highest frequencies of well-being. And mm-hmm. so in helping people come back into alignment with the fullness of who they are, I was able to see how just me telling people, well, you're not sick, you're sacred. Just even that one little sentence, I can't tell you, all the letters I've gotten, it seems like that one sentence seems to resonate so much. Teeth said, I looked at the back cover of the book and I saw that and I knew this book would help me, and it really right. has, because no one wants to feel disconnected from the source. And so when they were able to see the alternative ways that I re-described all the diagnosis in a holistic way that made people feel whole and complete versus defective and sick, it seems to have really been touching a nerve in the core of humanity for those who know about it so far. And so I'm so pleased that it's offering the relief that I was hoping it would offer, because as we know, relief is the cure all medicine seeks, whether it's mental, physical, or spiritual. And so knowing that people are feeling that relief just touches me dearly.
Well, it's very exciting, and I want to give you some time after the break to go into some detail about, you know, one or two specific diagnoses, so we can really hear how you how you think about it differently. But I wanted to share a story with you. During that period when I was studying with my teachers, and at the time living in a camper, I worked nights in a locked psych unit. And it was a dual diagnosis hospital. Everybody had a physical ailment as well as whatever their psych problem was. And I had the geriatric hallway. So I had older folks who had a physical problem, but also a psychological problem. And most of them were medicated. And many of them, in my experience, they were the kind of person who was having an ongoing conversation with their, in quotation marks, voices. And here I was extremely sensitive to all of this because I was doing all of this training, and I could see who they were talking to. So from my perspective, these people, in much the same way you described, had they been supported or had they been in a culture that venerates people that have that skill, they would have gone through their lives totally differently, and they wouldn't have wound up in their 80s as the crazy old lady in the psych hospital because, you know, she talks to her voices all the time.
Right.
And for the people who were psychotic and dangerous, I could see that they were being harassed by demons. And I watched some of the sessions between the psychiatrists and the patient, and I knew there was a third party in the room, and the patient knew there was a third party in the room, but the doctor didn't, because the doctor didn't have that sensitivity and had a belief system that said that those non-physical entities don't exist. That's crazy. And that meant that the patient thought the doctor was crazy, because how could you not know this is here? It's really obvious. And the doctor thought the patient was crazy. And in a way, they were both right. But the point was that they were living in a completely different experience of the situation. So I would leave the hospital often just shaking my head going, oh, my goodness, the world is nothing like what anybody thinks it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's extremely expansive and broad. And while you're on the subject of that, I just grabbed my manual and let's just look at the schizophrenia, which you're talking about there. And
well, we only have about 3 minutes to the break. So I don't want to get into something juicy and not have time to give to do it justice and get cut off.
Okay. Not a problem.
So let's make sure that people know how to find you online. What's the best website for them to know about?
Sure. DrAmeliaKemp.com. That's DrAmeliaKemp. DrAmeliaKemp.com, and or on Facebook, facebook.com/DrAmeliaKemp. I'm new to that, so if anybody's listening, please like me on Facebook. I didn't know I was supposed to be asking people that all the time, but I've only been on there 5 months. But what I've decided to do is start putting up a weekly poster from my radio show, which is also called From Psychotherapy to Sacred Therapy. And unlike this format, it's strictly about the 8 steps of my book. And so each week I go through some part of the step or one of the 24 exercises for auditory learners so that they can also hear the work. And when people comment about what they liked about the show, I usually take one or two quotes from the show and have tried to make decorative posters so that they can have some positive posters.
Terrific.
By 10 around their house if they want to download it or office.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to go to break in just a minute, and we'll be back shortly unless we get taller. Don't go nowhere. We will be right back, and we're going to have more of this fantastic conversation with Dr. Amelia Kemp, talking about psychology and spirituality and healing. So don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
this week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's a helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Dr. Amelia Kemp and an absolutely fascinating conversation about your approach to all of this. And we were just going to start talking about schizophrenia, which is one of those topics where, as far as I'm concerned, most people are clueless. In the medical world.
Right. Yeah. Before I share with the audience what I have here, the way the book is outlined, each diagnosis is broken down into three parts. Mm-hmm. So first, the first part of every diagnosis says, what's the matter? Because when people come in my office, you know, I say, what's the matter? But as a metaphysician, I mean, what's the matter at the energy basis? So not just what's the matter psychologically, but the energy basis, of course, is the spiritual part. Because when we say each of these are using symbolic sites, so every diagnosis is reframed from the energy basis of it. And energy, so that the audience understands, is the capacity of any physical system, and in our case, the body temple, that's the amount of heat or power being released or absorbed, which is our life force or vital essence, which is that spirit part. And so the energy basis of these diagnoses as it relates to sacral therapy is its divine essence or life force. And so with each one, the first part is what's the matter. The second part of each diagnosis is either classified as a misaligned thought or a divine intention. And the way that the reader knows which one it is is that it's italicized, and whichever word's italicized, they'll know it's that one. And in this case, with schizophrenia, I see it as a divine intention. And then part three of every diagnosis is an alignment process that I give the reader to use to start saying to themselves until the automatic old thought of how they used to view it subsides and they see that this is the thought that pops in their head. So with that foundation, I'll share with you what I have here. Was that clear, you think?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Fascinating. And just to frame this for people that don't know about the diagnoses, the manual that all people in the psychological world use to come up with a diagnosis, which is therefore what they get paid for, but also is how physicians prescribe the medications, is the DSM now 5, the diagnostic and...
Correct.
Yeah, I forget what the second letter is, manual. And I don't remember how many hundreds of diagnoses are in there, but each time they go through a new iteration of it, they rearrange it and they rename everything and they add more ways that you can be considered crazy.
Well, some come out. And so it's 170 of them, and I've reframed them all. And it was the ICD-9, which is was ICD-10 now, the international classification of diagnosis as well. And so the medical model sees schizophrenia basically as a disorder in which a person cannot tell what is reality and that it interferes with their capacity to meet ordinary demands of life, including prominent hallucinations, delusions, disorganized speech, or disorganized behavior. That's just a summary of how they see it, even though there's many, many types of schizophrenias and they have pages on it, but that's just a summary of what we mean when we say schizophrenia A, and I broke it down into two types. And so, but my take on it is this. Under where it would say misaligned thought or divine intention, I see it as anybody out there listening may take solace in the fact that all thought is invisible and exists within the non-physical realm. Therefore, it could be argued that everyone is first seeing things in the mind's eye that aren't really there physically until they manifest, and right, or are hearing things that aren't really being said, sometimes both literally and figuratively. And so the experience of what constitutes reality is relative to each person's ability to fully perceive one's moment-by-moment alignment with their mind, body, and spirit. And so the grasp of reality then lies within the consensus of the participants that agree that this particular matter, quote-unquote matter, or experience is or isn't reality, and reality is then and only then labeled the normative curve. As such, each person gets to determine his or her own reality based on his or her own preoccupations. So the schizophrenia can be viewed as a magnification of this perceptually diverse vantage point, which is why I see schizophrenia as a divine intention, because I see it as the inherent understanding that the fullness of one's being is not confined to the agreed upon parameters of human thought, which is abstract and beyond brain chemistry. One's ability to perceive beyond the conventional constructs of consciousness that connect the physical with the non-physical can become blurred. And due to its fuzziness, one may become panicked without the familiar anchors of beingness, but one need not fear its ascent to expanded consciousness and obscure reality, and instead can take comfort in the fact that there are simply subtle degrees of alignment connecting the physical and non-physical realities. Therefore, the true basis of one's reality, whether one is focused on the physical or focused on the non-physical or something in between, is the unchanging fact that one's spirit is the part that is stable.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see that. And so that
you have a wonderful way of expressing it.
Thank you. That's the part two of it. And then the alignment process for the person, once they've read my take on it, they would say this particular part, which is, I am grounded in the fact that the God source part of me is that which is stable. I honor the fact that these other realities that I have experienced have expanded my understanding that life is no longer a question of what is real or unreal, but rather what is physical or non-physical. For this is a sacred delineation this is a sacred delineation and clarification, and therefore I am relieved as I find the perfect blended balance for me. And so that's one of the ones, and then in parentheses, I tell them that it's nothing wrong if they would like to utilize an herbal remedy or a medication to assist in their alignment of embracing more with the physical versus the non-physical, but that neither of those are something that they have to fear. And so that's what I did for that one. An example,
It brings up so many rich things from my background. First of all, if you actually read what's going on in physics, 3.3% of everything in the universe is physical matter. Everything else is energy, but they don't know exactly what it is or how it works because they don't have a way to measure it yet.
That's right.
So that's an incredible confirmation of the energy versus matter, physical reality versus non-physical reality. And it doesn't even enter into the medical model at all these days for most people.
That's why I show in my book, I have some illustrations, and I have a picture of a brain with a plug that you'd see hanging out of an electronic product that plugs into the universe, because I want people to understand that their brain and their mind are two different things, and that brain
right.
plugs into universal mind, and that's that which we call God or creator or source or whatever a person wants to call that, and that's so big. And
yeah.
So that's why brain chemistry, I think the ancients, We left so much of what they tried to offer back in the early days because they understood the word psychology comes from two words, psyche and logos, which meant the study of the soul or universal mind. But modern medicine misconstrued universal mind with brain chemistry. So everything became brain chemistry versus them understanding this more expansive view of beingness. And so I believe that the soul comes in and out of bodies for this expansion, and so their mind is always connected and always healthy, and many may choose these, what I consider, sacred agreements that they want to come into the physical to experience, to demonstrate for others that we're more than just our body temple, that this is just physical apparatus stuff here.
Right.
And so that's how I view that one. And that's a deep subject for many, many people. And so one that's not as complicated as that would be, you asked for a couple examples. I'll give you the second example is gender identity issue.
Okay.
Which was changed this year. And so when you mentioned how some diagnoses change over time, it's just so true, because with each manual that's come out every so often, something gets in, and that's that normative curve that I was talking about when we were talking about schizophrenia. If human experience is going beyond the confounds of that, who are you to say where you're going to draw the line? It
mm-hmm.
needs to be all-inclusive. Let's stop this box, and everybody gets in. Don't say, well, you're too little of it and you're too much of it, so you folks have disorders. No, that's part of the human experience. All of it's blessed, and let's count it in so everybody can feel good about what they came forth to do. And so the same with gender identity, which they call disorder, but as you hear me say, I like the word reaction. But here again is another divine intention. The way I see it, the medical model sees this as a disorder in which a person feels that either their genitalia of their body feels wrong and different from how they see themselves, or feel uncomfortable with the aspects of gender that society assigns them. However, both cases share, as far as I'm concerned, the same energy basis of feeling that there's a mismatch. Mm-hmm. But I see it as a divine intention, because the way I see it is, I believe it's the soul's innate understanding that the core of one's being is spirit. One knows that neither gender nor genitalia determines one's connection, value, or prescribed journey. And as such, even when one comes forth in a specific gender, one can choose to embrace and experience the energy of the other. What a master demonstration of faith and constancy it is to allow oneself and others to witness the unimpenetrable core of the matter, which is our energy being. One is showing that even if one transforms the outer physical layer, one does so without affecting the non-physical layer. One stands firm to behold that I am that I am, even when the most socially misunderstood life choices puts it to test. And so that's how I see that as a divine intention. And so the alignment process for souls who come forth this way is this. I say, I came into the physical realm knowing that I am that I am that I am. I love the fact that this is so, whether others can or cannot embrace and join me in this certainty. It is clear to me that the God source in the universe loves me unconditionally and is the granter of all desires. For this source tells me to knock and the door shall open. And as such, I honor my desire to knock open barriers and demonstrate that the core of our being is unaffected by the physical apparatus. For I am a divine, moldable, and transformative being. And for this sacred awareness, I am so grateful. So that's the alignment process for that.
Wow. Wow. That's quite an affirmation. That's great.
Well, that's pretty much how each of the diagnoses are. You know, they break down that, and that's what I mean when I say the energy basis of it, going to symbolic meaning. Dr. Carolyn Miss, who wrote The Anatomy of Spirit, her terminology for it is symbolic sight. And then Bernie Siegel, an oncologist who wrote Love, Medicine, and Miracles, he offered it for his cancer patients, even understanding that symbolic meaning takes us into the realm of energy and matter and vibration. And we have to go beyond just physical apparatus, whether it's cancer, whether it's mental, physical, or spiritual. As I said, relief is what we're all reaching for. And so my book, that's why I say that my book is to help people know that the well-being and joy they seek is achievable. It didn't go anywhere. It's still there. So I want to remove that stigma and pathology from all of the diagnoses for people, to let them know you're not sick, you're sacred, and it's in all as well.
Yeah, it's the process you put together is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. You know, one of the things that comes up for me with the previous one, with schizophrenia, is that the world of the shaman is right on that line between the two realities. And so what medicine defines as a hallucination to the shaman is just going into the energy and doing what you need to do, seeing what you see, taking care of what needs to happen in the energy so that the physical world will have whatever resolution needs to happen. And I have some interesting conversations with psychiatrists, you know, when I meet them socially, and they always start with, look, we have to start the conversation with, I know I have multiple diagnoses in the DSM-4, but I'm not crazy. And, you know, they stand there shocked. They say, well, you know, my reality is different from your reality, and there are diagnoses for it, but I'm not crazy.
Right.
I've had some very interesting conversations that way. So all of what you're doing, taking it back to its energetic meaning and the energy behind what's going on, and then working with it from there, is absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful work.
Well, that's why I people ask, well, how did you come up with the 8 steps? And the 8 steps basically came because many doctors were asking me, what was I doing differently? Because they were sending clients to different places, but they saw that they were getting well faster. And that was about 10 years ago. And I really didn't know what I was doing differently. So I started tracking my outcomes to see, well, what is it? And I realized that it did seem that taking people through that whole what's the matter portion, which is step one, which I consider a psychoeducational portion, which gives mm-hmm. them a psychological and metaphysical or psycho-spiritual foundation for them to understand the fullness of who I believe we are. So that was interesting for many of them, and then not religious at all, but spiritual, just spirit, universal spiritual principles. And then secondly, reframing the matter the way you just heard me do it.
Yep.
The relief it brought to people, I mean, they start crying instantly. I mean, it was like so many, I can't tell you, say to me, if I heard this 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50, my whole life would have been different. Because
right.
instead they were walking around like they had a sign on their forehead that something's wrong with me. And the way I put it makes people have ease and they feel like, oh, so I am okay. And so that was humongous. And then the third step was helping them to understand how the matter manifested in the first place to prevent recreating and returning to those old patterns that come out of social conditioning, memes, and the social taboos and stigma. And so I have a chapter on that to help them understand how this insidiously got into their system in the first place, which took them out of alignment. And then we go through a witnessing process in step four, which I call the heart of the matter. Every chapter has the word matter in it because we're dealing with subtle matter here. And mm-hmm. so witnessing the heart of the matter, where one gives voice to mourning for what I call the authentic self, which is that energy spirit basis, which many thought was lost. And in existentialism, authenticity is basically the degree to which one is able to be true to their own self and their own choices, personality, without, despite rather, external pressures from society. And then they transmute any anger and rage into an aligned place of what we call sacred rage in my book, because so many of them thought that it wasn't fair, that they didn't know this. They feel like they've lost time and they're upset. And so
right.
we have to let them vent that. And then step five is staying clear of the matter, where one is able to fortify their resolve to fully release those old mental sets, because, you know, this stuff is heinous. It's really in us. It's just like an automatic thought now. So releasing that and embracing holism and something that's beautiful and kind for many people takes time. And then step six is what I call procreation. It's a whole new matter where one hones their ability to create the life they came forth to live, with the belief now at this point that they can really do it. They're taking their power back, which is that energy, because energy is power. So they take their power back, and then finally they enter into step seven, which is entering that inner sanctuary. And here is where one recognizes that realignment has been achieved, that mind, body, and spirit, they've integrated back now, and they begin to overflow with such a sense of gratitude and appreciation for having arrived and for having survived and for now having thrived and realizing that they're okay. Like the gentleman you said went to the doctor. No matter what you say, I'm not crazy. He knows who he is now. It's mm-hmm. You can't talk me out of it anymore, doc. I don't care what you say. I don't care what your memes are. I don't care what your conditioning is. I know who I am and I know who I came forth to be. And so it's such a beautiful thing to watch. And then finally is aftercare, where people are learning to stay aligned, which helps them to maintain their realignment through 12 additional practices there that I recommend, along with a bonus chapter for anybody who gets stuck through the eight steps. This one's not part of the eight steps, but it's a bonus chapter on ending the matter, which is for anyone experiencing suicidal thoughts or behavior, and right. how I go with them in terms of probable outcomes in the both physical and non-physical realms for them. And so that's basically the eight steps.
Well, Dr. Kent, I hate to say it, but we're out of time. Because I have okay. so much that we could talk about and so many questions for you. So maybe you can come on another time and we can pick up where we left off and go a little deeper into some of this stuff, because this is wonderful work, just wonderful work.
Thank you
so much for being on the show. My guest has been Dr. Amelia Kemp. Her website is dramelia.kemp.com, and we will have her back. I'm just so excited about your work. Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
And if you are at all curious about who this wild and crazy guy David is, please go to househealing.com. And on the contact tab, you'll find every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of what's going on in your situation with a person, a place, a business, court cases, all kinds of things, to see if my work will be helpful and how we can work together. So please take advantage of that. If you're looking for the archives of this show, or you would like to listen to the show at another time or pass it along to someone, they can find it at thefarkasfiles.com. We're also on iTunes Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and a bunch of other streaming audio internet radio programs. So you can find us all over the place at this point. And that's very exciting because most of the people who listen to the show listen to it at their convenience. And we've got listeners all over the planet. And that's very humbling and very exciting for me. What a wonderful thing to sit here and talk to great people and make a difference for you. So thank you so much for listening. So we will be back next week with more fascinating stuff to talk to and make you look at the world differently. And until then, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.